Hi, this is Steve Chandler, and as part of our Wealth Warrior movement, this program is called Becoming Financially Fearless. The first thing I want to talk about in becoming financially fearless is something I call creative subtraction. Here's the mistake most people make in their lives when they're living a work life, a professional life, and wanting to become more wealthy and prosperous. They keep adding things to their lives. They think addition is the key to power. The more knowledge I can add, the more seminars I can go to, the more contacts I have, the more leads I get through marketing, the more friends I get on social media, the more different things I can offer people. They keep adding things to do throughout the day. And they believe that through addition comes financial success. And what they don't see is more often than not, it comes through subtraction. It comes from simplicity. It doesn't come from making your life more complex, complicated, and overrun with 1,000 tiny things to remember to do. That leads to poverty. That does not lead to wealth. To take your brain, to take the most creative thing you've got, your imagination, and then all day to fill it up with all kinds of stressful little things you've added to your to-do list every day. This is not powerful. One of the reasons my Time Warrior book was so infuriating to so many people, even though it was a bestseller and people loved it and very liberating to a lot of people, to most people who read it, it was very liberating. I got tremendous feedback. But a lot of people were distressed and infuriated because it went against what they believed they would have to do to be a true time manager. They believed that to become better at anything, you have to add. You have to use addition. In other words, you're missing something that you have to add to yourself. And this is what people believe when I coach them simply about happiness and personal success. They think they're missing something that needs to be added. And this is the fallacy of addition. You can keep adding and adding and adding things to yourself and never reach where you're going. In fact, it gets worse and worse. We see this with the happiness factor. People who run into money, who inherit money somehow, or luck out with some kind of stock market gamble, and they've got a lot of money now, and they still don't feel happy. So the first question the mind goes to is, what must I add to my life to have me become happy? So first it's a granite countertop, and then it's a second home, which becomes so hard to manage, and then it's season tickets. And now I have season tickets I've added to my life, to the local professional team. But the problem is, I don't want to go to every game. So now it gets really complicated because who do I give my season tickets to? Do I give them to family? Who do I favor? Do I call people? Will they really use them? And I've added something here to my life that I thought would make my life happier. But each time I add something, it makes my life more of a hassle and more of a nightmare. And it makes life harder to live, and I'm actually less happy than I was. I had a boat, and now boat payments are being made, and I've got this nice boat, and after the novelty wears off, I never use the boat, and now I have to take care of the boat. I can't just leave it there, and now do I rent it out? Am I going to sell it someday? Okay, now I'm selling my boat, and so it takes up a lot of my time. I'm getting some offers, and look how we complicate life by adding things. This happens in people's business too. They're only breaking even, they're not doing quite well. What do we need to add? What kind of things do we need to add to our business? And what they don't see is if they would simplify by subtracting, that's where the real power always is. Like Michelangelo, he saw a big slab of marble, and his art was to subtract until he got a beautiful statue. That's really the power. When I work with businesses sometimes, The way they get turned around is to find out, what are the activities that actually bring you wealth? I call these the high return activities. Let's identify those. And then let's start subtracting all the stuff you guys are doing that don't return much of anything to you. Once you do that, amazing wealth starts to occur for you because now you're simplified, and anytime you simplify, you're more powerful. Bruce Lee once said, I don't fear the opponent who has 10,000 different kicks that he's practiced. I fear the opponent who has practiced one kick 10,000 times. So it's the simplicity that gives you power. Sometimes I work with consultants and coaches, and I look at their day, and I look at their week, and I see all kinds of networking activity, and blog writing activity, and marketing activity, and all this lead generation activity, and things they're doing throughout the day that don't have any chance of a client coming their way. I mean, there's no chance. There's no connection being made. There's no conversation happening that could result in a sale. So every sale occurs inside a conversation. You can't have a sale occur outside a conversation. So therefore, the 80-20 rule applies. Let's look at how to add more conversations to our day. Actually, I said the word add, but here's what I really mean. There are conversations that occur. Let me subtract things that are not conversations from my week, leaving space for more conversations to happen, or better conversations, or longer conversations. You know, the longer the conversation, the higher the likelihood that a sale will be made, because you'll discover how you can serve that person the longer you talk to him or her. Creative subtraction is the way to go. Now we're going to look at what's the role of fear in this. Because once you see it, and you see all the low return activity that you indulge in, all the busyness that does not produce wealth, does not give you a high return, once you can see that really clearly, then you'll want to move to a more simple life, and you'll want to move into the 20% that gives you 80% of your money. Why don't we just do that naturally? There's a reason, and fear is it. Now let's use the example of the person who is not having very many conversations that lead to sales. Instead, he's filling his day with a lot of busy work that he has convinced himself is very necessary to running this business. But sales are not occurring, and so money is not arriving. And he's about to go out of business, but maybe with the help of a coach or the dark night of the soul, where he goes away for a weekend and sits in a cabin with two whiteboards and asks himself, if I had to succeed, what would I do? I mean, that's a wonderful question. It's amazing what we do when we have to. If you had to do this, what would you do? Because that wakes you up. You always really know. But let's say you sit with a coach, and the coach is the one who forces you to answer that question. If you had to succeed, what would you do? Because now the answers are different. And what happens is people really see, well, I'd have more conversations for sales. We're using that one example, but all businesses have a similar kind of example, or all individuals in any profession, whether they're a custodian or a poet or anything, has the same situation. So make your situation parallel to what I'm saying. Don't check out and say, oh, well, I don't do sales, so I'm going to stop listening. No, no. Everyone sells for a living, so stay with me. Here's the thing you want to look at. These conversations that result in sales, even if you're a singer, these auditions, even if you're an actor, these auditions I do, everybody has an equivalent of that. Why don't I do more of them? And why don't I do more important ones with bigger opportunities behind them. And the reason is fear. We avoid them because of fear. Now, some people avoid them just out of pure ignorance. They just don't get it. They don't see it. Well, we can help them there. But then they avoid them subtly out of fear. So let's go to the fear. Now, fear is caused by thought. I only know of two ways to make fear go away. One is to challenge the thought that produces the fear. And that's one way. It's very important that you know and use both ways. It's not like choose one. I mean, know them both and use them both so you can eliminate fear as a factor in your financial life. You want to just absolutely eliminate that, really and truly. I can assure you, you'll be so happy when you do. Thought produces fear. What do I believe that's causing this fear? What am I thinking? I want to identify that thought. Well, maybe I think I don't really have anything that would serve this person. Maybe I'm not worthy. Who am I to work with this person? Maybe I'm thinking that. So I don't call him or I don't contact him and I don't offer my service. That's a thought. Who am I? I don't have enough service. Well, I want to challenge that thought. How do I know that's true? I don't know that's true. I may be able to really help this guy. So let me connect with him and see. I might even tell him I have no idea if I can serve you. But if I can, I'd love to. Let's talk for 5 minutes. I have three important questions for you. The fear of having this conversation is what gets in the way. So I want to challenge the thought that produces the fear. What do I believe? I could get hurt by having the conversation. I could get injured. I could be humiliated. I could be rejected. Well, that's just a thought that I've been rejected. So I want to work with that. This whole thing called rejection stops people from making money. You can't be rejected. Rejected's just a word. It's just a concept. There's no reality of it. Two people are talking. They exchange information and then they walk away. Where's the rejection? Maybe the information is that they will now be working together. And maybe the information is that right now they won't be working together. The information's important and helpful. I want to know if I'm going to be working with you or if I'm not, because that helps me guide my time management. So I'm not going to be upset because you said the timing's not right or the value's not there or the match isn't correct. It's not a fit for right now. I'm not going to get upset over that because I want to understand that doesn't mean anything negative about me as a human being or my value or my worth. That's just a weird superstition. In the world of commerce and business and free markets and exchanges of value, I want people to be able to say no. I don't want to fear no. Yes lives in the land of no. I have to be willing to enter the land of no thank you, no, I don't want that service. I have to be willing to enter that valley to get any money at all, because that's where the money is. Yes lives in the land of no. If I won't go into the land of no, I'll never get a yes. I can't just carve the yes out of the world and only have that so I won't feel rejected. This exaggerated respect I pay for my own feelings is going to stop me from making money. I want to look at the role of thought and belief and eliminate these negative feelings around someone saying no thank you. That's just a simple no thank you. I want to be like the waiter in a restaurant who comes up to your table and says, would you like some dessert? Would you like a dessert menu? If the person says no thank you, do I feel totally personally rejected, like I have no self-worth, I have no soul? Or do I just accept that as information? If they say, no thank you, now I know not to bring them a dessert menu, and it simplifies life. If someone tells me, no thank you, I don't want to work with you, then great, that simplifies life. I once asked my coach, Steve Hardison, the ultimate coach, what do you do? What should I do? This was many years ago, 15 years ago. I would say, what do you do when someone says no? He said, I say, next, next. It's powerful. But what do most people do when someone says no? They say, oh no, I lost that deal. I wasn't good enough. I wasn't worthy as a human being. There's something wrong with me. I better not make so many offers. It's too painful. Rejection is so painful. I'm going to do busy work for a day or two. I've got to fix my website today. And I've got a lot of other things I need to do. I have a marketing campaign I need to do. All these things begin to be built into a person's world to avoid the next conversation. It's what I call 10-foot pole selling. People are actually creating steps and obstacles between two people to avoid that conversation. I don't want to be rejected again. It's too painful. Well, the only thing painful about so-called rejection is the story I believe around a no. I have a story that I tell myself that no means I'm not worthy. No means people don't respect me. No means all these negative things about me as a person. And those stories are producing my fear to enter another or bigger conversation. The no doesn't produce the fear. I want to change my relationship to no. I want to see that there is no such thing as rejection. It's like witchcraft. It's a concept. It's an idea. It's a superstition. It doesn't live in reality. All we have in reality are exchanges of words and either an agreement to work together or not. Move on. Next. Next. That's where I want to come from. Well, we've looked at one thing that leads us toward being more financially fearless, and that is changing my relationship to the word no, changing my relationship, detoxifying my superstitious belief system around the idea of rejection. Challenge that. Put it down on paper. No means I've been rejected. Is that true? Use Byron Katie's work anytime you feel any fear. It's very powerful and fast. Use Dr. Martin Seligman's disputation every time you feel a negative thought. Now, what's another way? The second way, also important, do the thing you're afraid to do. Now, once you do the thing you're afraid to do, let's say calling an intimidating person and offering him my service, then it becomes less scary to do the second time. We all know this deep down. And children do this. They don't challenge their thoughts. They just go out and do it. And doing it enough times has them less fearful of it, and that's how they deal with it. But adults have this really strange feeling about doing what they're afraid to do. They believe if they're afraid to do something, that rules out all chance of doing it. The adults have come to that. It's like a really cautious cocoon-like life where I don't venture out. I stay safe. I'm someone who does not feel uncomfortable during the day. That's my mission. But there's no money in my account. And I don't see the connection between the two. Here's the connection. All growth takes place outside your comfort zone, not inside your comfort zone. You can't grow in there. And therefore, I want to be able to venture out. I want to experiment and play with doing the thing I'm afraid to do, calling the person I'm afraid to call, and doing a lot of that during the day, and watching how exhilarating and fun it is, and how great I feel afterwards. so that I'm encouraged to do more tomorrow. That's very, very important. Do the thing you're afraid to do. Now, one time I remember I was stationed at Fort Bragg in the military in North Carolina, and we were right next to the 82nd Airborne. And I was talking to one of the sergeants, and you know, they teach people to jump out of airplanes, and the Green Berets, and those people who parachute in dangerous situations. And I was talking, I was in the psychological warfare division that was adjacent to the 82nd Airborne, so we met a lot of those 82nd Airborne guys, and I talked to a sergeant once who was an instructor for jump school. He would teach people to jump out of airplanes. And I said to him, you know, this would be impossible for me to do. I have a kind of vertigo. I have a fear of heights, and it's hard for me to even get on a chair to change a light bulb without getting dizzy and fearful. And so I'd never be able to do that. And he said, oh, no, you'd be able to do it. And I said, no, you don't understand. You don't know me. I'd wash out of that school quickly. He said, no, you'd be able to do it. You'd do it. Not only would you be able to do it, but after a while, you'd look forward to doing it. I can promise you that. And I thought, how can that be? And I said, I'm sorry, I don't believe you. He said, look, we've had a lot of people like you, terrified to do it. And they didn't believe they could ever do it. And now they can't wait. Well, what happened? Well, here's what happened. We get them up there, and if they don't feel like jumping, we help them out of the plane. And so they will leave the plane. They will exit the aircraft. We guarantee that. And then the rest is up to them, and their training kicks in, and they pull the right cords, and they're on the ground. Now, once they've done this enough times, something occurs, and they now eagerly line up to get on the next flight to do some jumps. So if you do it enough times, what happens is something changes inside of you, and your relationship to jumping is different. Well, I nodded my head, and you know what? I believed him. And I remembered certain things in my life where I didn't use the method of challenging my thought because I didn't know about it. Yet there were things I had to do to succeed at a certain element of my career that I was terrified to do. Like speaking in public, I was terrified. But I had to figure out ways to do it and to make myself do it and to do it in small increments and to do it in pretend ways. All these things I did to trick myself into getting experience doing it that had the fear go away. And it was true. It was just exactly like jumping out of airplanes that the sergeant told me. I had a different relationship to talking in front of a room full of people after having done it many times than I did at the beginning. Now that I've done it actually thousands of times, I can't wait to do it. It's just fun. It's exhilarating. It's one of the most fun things I do. Yet, other people say, even very self-confident, strong ego, high-powered CEO types of people that I work with, they're terrified about talking to their company at the big company retreat. They're really nervous, and they read their speech hesitantly and all that, and they try to make it short, and they laugh nervously in front of the group, and then they quickly sit down. What they have not done is achieve any level of mastery at speaking by repetition. Now, some really dedicated leaders will go to a Carnegie course or do other things that have them really good at speaking because they're practiced. So the second way of eliminating fear and creating wealth because of it is to find the thing that you fear doing that you know will lead to better and more and bigger conversations that will lead to more service from you for others, and practice those and do those and set it up. Trick yourself into doing them and chart it and track it. Don't let yourself avoid those things. They have a big, dividend to pay you.